I'm Ellen Mary.
And I'm Michael Perry.
And he's a plonky.
And she's a plant addict.
And this is the Plant-Based Podcast.
This is more than just a gardening podcast. We'll be exploring the world of plants from every possible angle. We'll be talking about plant-based diets, plant materials and fabrics, the well-being qualities of plants, and giving plenty of gardening tips and tricks.
So we'll be chatting worldwide to companies and individuals that are being creative with plants in new and exciting ways, from fabulous flower crowns to foliage-filled lounges,
botanical moisturizers to bamboo clothing.
It's all here.
And it's all made of plants.
Sutton's, suppliers of gardening products since 1806, sponsor the Plant-Based Podcast. Visit them online at suttons.co.uk.
So, we've got a very exciting interview today because it's actually our first Skype interview and we are interviewing Marcus Kobel from Lubera, which is a Swiss fruit company. Do you like fruit, Ellen?
I love fruit. Yeah. I'm fruity, mate. I'm looking forward to this.
Have you heard of Lubera before?
Heard of Lubera before, mm-hmm. Yeah, and all the funky fruit that they do, because yeah. I often see like all kinds of different varieties.
I know.
So I'm really excited to hear more from Marcus.
It's amazing. Of course, a lot of this fruit you wouldn't be able to find in the supermarkets yeah. either, so the only way to experience that unique flavour, unique colour of fruit is to grow your own. So, Marcus, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, good to see you. Ellen hasn't met you yet, but I've met you at many trade shows, and we always have great chats about yellow raspberries and blue bananas, the last one I made up. But yeah, it's pretty good.
Blue bananas?
Tell us the story of Lubera from the beginning, like even back to your childhood. Did you love fruit from a young age, and how did the company kind of start and then get where it is today?
I always loved eating. Not especially gardening.
Ellen's the same.
So, that's a good
As a child, I was more interested. I was never outdoors. I was always reading books.
Uh-huh.
And later on, when I was 8, 10, I was also more interested in literature and reading. And then later on, I made my money on the farm of my aunt, and uh-huh. more and more became interested in farming. There, I had the choice between cows and plants, and I definitely decided for plants.
Yay!
Brilliant.
I'm really pleased
against
to hear
cows.
That.
We've had other people
so
saying that.
When I was in college, I always knew that I would do something either with plants or with literature. Then I tried first literature. I studied German literature in Switzerland and Germany. Didn't finish it, and then changed to horticulture. And there I am still now.
You know, there are many people that we have interviewed for the podcast who started off studying biology or animals or marine life, something different, but they later realised throughout their studies that actually plants are way cooler.
Yeah, but that first I studied literature. But in the end, I'm doing the same thing now because within my company I'm responsible for development and breeding and marketing, and so in marketing, content marketing, so telling stories mm-hmm. In videos, in writing is very important. So in the end, I'm producing, sort of literature again.
Yeah.
So you wear lots of hats then at your company, don't you?
Yeah.
And you've developed some really unusual varieties there, haven't you? Because I've seen some press releases and some different fruits that can be grown, like shrub varieties in pots.
Red apples.
Red flesh apples.
Yeah.
You know, all kinds of different varieties. Can you just tell us about some of the unusual varieties that you do have available?
Yes, there are many in the end, but perhaps red laurels are still the most known things
yeah.
and development is going
famous,
on. So we are every year
product.
We are breeding or we are crossing, doing again crosses. We are producing some thousand seeds also for red laurel plants mm-hmm. to have them more bloomy with more perfumed blooms, to have them with even better eating quality, more sugar, columnar mm-hmm. types, hanging types. So breeding is seedless type, so we are working on seedless apples and also seedless red laurels.
Oh, wow.
So it's going on. And the origin is always that we want to have something different because we are mainly breeding for the home garden market. Mm-hmm. And there, you know, in the professional market, when you're breeding for the professional market, people are more interested in the same, mm-hmm. but a little better.
Well, so you've really changed the world of apples with your new varieties, but you've also done a lot with different berries as well, haven't you? You've really made raspberries and blackberries able to be grown in different ways, like baskets and pots. So tell us a bit about your work with berries of all types.
Yes, I think there we are working with all the common types of berries, you know, so strawberries, raspberries. Yeah. And there the difference between professional fruit breeding, so breeding for the professional fruit market and for the home garden is very big, because the professional breeding for the professional market is very concentrated on everything after picking the fruit. Mm-hmm. Because the fruit has to survive some days, some weeks even, till it is consumed and bought. And we are concentrating on the plant itself till the picking time.
Okay.
And later on we are not interested in. And so that's a very big difference in the focus you have. And so when you're concentrating on breeding for the home garden market, you are freeing a big amount of creativity and possibilities, because then you are concentrating on easy of culture, on good quality fruit, good to eat, resistance and difference, and perhaps adding also a little bit of ornamental value to fruit value. And this makes a lot of varieties possible, which wouldn't be possible in the professional market. And especially we have bred for compact plants. This is often, very often, the same type of breeding. So in the evolution, negative traits like compact growth became recessive in the genetics. So you can see them. They're recessive in the genes, because if you would see them, then the plants would grow lower and they wouldn't survive in the free nature. So by selfing varieties, we find this negative, in the nature negative, traits which are so interesting for gardening. And that's the way we found compact growth in their different genes, compact growth, different types of compact growth in raspberries and also blackberries. Mm-hmm. And for example, our compact apples, bushy compact apples, we name them Maloney, they come also out of selfing some varieties and finding these negative traits, which are so interesting for gardening.
Okay.
Yeah. It's really interesting, actually, because I think as someone who purchases plants, you don't necessarily think about the massive big difference there is with, you know, a breeding for home growers to against professional growers.
Commercially,
you don't really think about that. Uh-huh. So that's super interesting. I hear that you're perhaps also rediscovering some of the older fruit varieties too. Is that the case?
Yeah, there perhaps, if you are talking with the breeder about older varieties, so what is very interesting to find old fruits and also old vegetables, which you can renew. It's very seldom that you can really use old varieties for nowadays gardening and also fruit production, because our world has changed. So when we're talking with a breeder like me about old varieties, I normally say older varieties have become old because there were better ones.
Okay.
And because the world has changed. For example, in the 19th, 18th, 17th century, pears were something you were eating fresh because they were soft and you didn't have teeth. And apples were only used for producing alcohol.
Uh-huh.
And nowadays, it's the other way around. So pears are too soft, too juicy. People don't like them. It's not clean
enough.
There's
nothing wrong with a conference pear.
And apples are eaten because they are very good for our good teeth we have nowadays.
Uh-huh.
Okay. That's
cool. Yeah. What about the star-shaped apple? Is that a myth or does it actually exist? Do you know the Appy Star? Have you heard of that one?
Yeah.
It exist?
No, that's an old variety, a very old variety, perhaps even cultivated by the Romans.
Uh-huh.
And again, we made crosses with... So we are using old varieties to make new ones.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, we couldn't work without old varieties because there are the genes and we are using them like you are using a bibliotheque of old books.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, you don't read books. Yeah, perhaps Shakespeare in UK, in your country. But normally...
We read it every day.
How many other books you are reading out of the 16th or 17th century?
Mm-hmm.
Not much. You are using them for producing new books.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same with breeding.
Right.
Okay. So are you breeding a star-shaped apple then?
Yes, of course.
Oh, so it's exclusive.
We have crosses. We made crosses with it. Until now, we haven't found something very, very interesting.
Wow.
And it seems that the trade is not going further very, 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 very easy. But we made crosses with star-shaped apples, of course.
I kind of can't believe it.
It's super cool.
I'll believe it when I see it. But, you know, breeding all of these new and really interesting varieties must be so exciting for you personally as well to introduce new things onto the market. So is there a particular development that's your own individual favourite choice?
In the end, in breeding, it's all about continuity and stability. So you have to do your work every year. It's a long time thing. So, I think perhaps objectively, really red love apples are very interesting. But for me, it's an old story. It's going on. I'm always very enthusiastic about new things I'm starting. So since some years, we have started rhubarb breeding. And we were, because there isn't much rhubarb breeding nowadays, and we found many interesting stories. We found out how the genetics of everbearing rhubarbs works.
Mm-hmm.
We are working on redder varieties, more ornamental varieties. So this type of story, we think, for me, is very interesting when I'm starting something new, I'm learning very fast.
Mm, yeah, that's really cool.
It's really cool, and there's nothing... I love a rhubarb and banana crumble, you know. It's my favourite.
Rhubarb and banana?
You're
crazy.
No, it's absolutely...
You know, an interesting story in the rhubarb some years ago, from the UK came some new varieties which are sort of everbearing, so like Livingston, where you can have rhubarbs also in summer and autumn. And we found out how this plant came to us. So in the 19th century, people in Australia were very interested also to grow rhubarbs because to have the same thing like the British uncles and ancestors. And so they sold rhubarb seeds, and they selected, unwillingly, they selected varieties which didn't need so much cold.
Okay. Yeah,
we are in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And which were growing like crazy and which were tolerant
mm-hmm.
against heat. And in the end of the 19th century, Luther Burbank, the most important breeder in the 19th century in the U.S., in Santa Rosa, he ordered some of these rhubarbs, ever-bearing rhubarbs, which already existed in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
He ordered them for American selected own perpetual rhubarbs himself, bringing to the Californian market.
Mm-hmm.
And these plants also came to UK. And it's a good guess. I don't know for sure that the new varieties are coming from this strain. Uh-huh. And out of this knowledge, we have learned which varieties, especially southern varieties, are good parents to breed ever-bearing rhubarbs.
Excellent.
So telling stories and learn about stories is also very important for breeding.
Wow, yeah. I can tell you really enjoy it as well. Yeah, wow. But it needs a lot of patience, doesn't it, to breed a new variety? Because we're talking like 5 years minimum, new variety to market. How long does it really, really take?
No, it's longer.
It's longer.
20 years.
So it
depends what you need. We have a program. We started a program for seedless apples.
Okay.
We bought some genetics, basic genetics from East Molling, and also learned a lot of them. And with this material, we started about 12 years ago. And we will have the first seedless apples for perhaps in 8 years.
Uh-huh.
So to see only the first results, it takes 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you must be a little bit crazy in breeding fruits, especially top fruit.
Yeah.
But that's also a very interesting thing. That's long term.
Yeah.
So it's not so important what you have to do your work every year. But it's not so important what you're doing this year. It's more the continuity of the work, the long-term mm-hmm. continuity to have results. And the other thing is to have every year new things, new stories is also that we have to start every year new projects. For example, we are working now a little bit with perennial vegetables. We are even working a little bit with or testing or trying a little bit in aubergines and tomatoes. Okay. So it's important to start every year some new things, to test something, to sample varieties from all over the world of a certain fruit, of a certain genus, and then after some years deciding if it's worth to go deeper into this story and to mm-hmm. start breeding.
Wow, that's really fun. I've always loved eating vegetables and fruit, but also unusual ones as well. And I've always wanted to grow my own unusual ones or find them in farm shops. So, yeah, I love it.
It's definitely like a really long, patient period of time to wait until you can actually take something to market.
I'd be that patient.
Yeah, you have to be the most patient person. But part of that process, Marcus, like, there must be so much testing involved. You know, what's the process of testing new varieties so that they can reach us at home to grow?
In the end, when I decided to start breeding about 25 years ago, I was learning a lot from East European breeders, especially in Eastern Germany. And in the beginning of the 90s, I sat one day in a restaurant with two breeders from East Germany, and we were talking about apple breeding. And then I said, when I'm testing your varieties, it takes me so long to test them, perhaps it would be better that I do my own breeding. And they said, yes, they helped me a lot. And thanks of them, I could start my apple breeding program. But what I said there is very true. So when you are starting testing a variety of a third-party breeder, it takes you also 10, 12, 13 years to know really if it works. Then you're selecting your numbers. Mm-hmm. Then out these numbers you are propagating to have this apple, that raspberry, this strawberry. Then you are testing them again on one or two places. So you're adding always at every step to your knowledge. And so that's the reason that it's possible to bring them to the market. Then also on the market, we have a two-step cycle. Mm-hmm. First, when you're starting a variety after having tested them on two locations with 30, 40 plants, then normally you don't have big quantities of plants. Mm-hmm. So we start to sell them on our web shop, lubera.com or lubera.co.uk. And so there we need rather small quantities. So there we are selling lots of plants, but small quantities of many, many plants. Mm-hmm. And then if you find it's good, then it's going to our young plant company, which is named Lubera Edibles. And this company then is producing young plants in micropropagation in vitro and selling to all the gardeners. This is a new add-on to our companies, but with this we have a two-step process. First, bringing variety to our own clients. There is always a little risk. So every 10th varieties, we are also making mistakes. That's possible. But when we have sold the first 100 plants, we know very fast if it works because feedback of our consumer is very direct. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we can decide if we can go into a bigger scale. So our clients, in the end, are helping us develop our varieties.
Yeah, you give them almost a bit of a test run because when it comes...
Yeah, it's a little bit a test run because if you would start with a variety with a 10,000 or 100,000, mm-hmm. That's really, really a risk. And,
yeah, of course.
But starting with some 100 is very easy. And I remember... a variety we brought some years ago, and we didn't see the problem this plant had in our tests mm-hmm. because you don't see everything. Always when you go to the market, you learn a lot more.
Yeah, when it's in real gardens
at
home.
Some people know more than two, three people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And obviously when you do bring a plant to market on a wide scale, marketing's so important to you guys, and you do it really well too, don't you? You've got some great names for your plants. You know, how does that all get put together? Are you working on that, or you've got some help with the naming, or where does all that come from?
No, naming is my specialty.
Uh-huh.
Of course, doing some thinking together and making lists. But in the end, it's my idea, and I need also a little bit of pressure to do it. And then
you leave it till the last minute,
and then to write the right story.
Because story is everything, isn't it? And you know so much about the varieties that it's easy for you to create that.
Yes, I think that's if you have this the same team, the same persons who is breeding and telling the story, it makes it easier. And since I've started breeding, also when I didn't have any products, any finished results, I was using breeding for marketing purposes. And when you look at our videos, when you see, I make often videos not only about the finished product, but also about the breeding process. Because it's a part of our story, which is very unique, and why we shouldn't tell this story. So talking about the breeding, of course, there is some secret sauce. So we won't talk about the very secret things. But in general, we like talking about breeding and how we are doing breeding.
Okay. That's, well, so interesting and so creative as well. I love some of the names.
I really need to go and visit one day. I think we should both go. I think it'd be a nice experience.
Yeah, to Switzerland, yes.
Head over to Switzerland. So actually, that kind of brings me on to a question, Marcus, and that's some of the testing that you do, or the majority must be in Switzerland. But how is the climate similar to the UK climate when growing fruit?
No, it's harsher here. Yeah. So perhaps we have hotter summers. Not the last summer, but in general we have hotter summers, but colder winters.
Yeah.
But you know, we have a second nursery in northern Germany, so we have two places.
Okay.
And northern Germany near Bremen, and there the climate is very similar.
Yeah,
Southern UK.
If you're breeding varieties in a harsher climate, that makes them more hardy for the UK, perhaps, over winter. Anyway, I don't know. But all I can say is I've been skiing in Switzerland and it was really cold.
Well, of course it is.
The winter, there can be problems in northern Germany and in UK. That's also the reason we have this nursery in northern Germany and where we are producing plants and also a little bit testing plants. So we have always a good experience what is working in northern Germany, about 80 kilometers from the coast, and there the climate is really very similar to UK, middle England, southern England.
Beautiful. Well, that brings me on to my last question for this section before we go on to talking about what viewers, listeners can grow at home. What is the most exotic fruit that you've been surprised that you could grow in your nurseries there in Switzerland?
We have started propagated citrus.
Okay.
And of course, we are again trying in the future, developing and testing a lot of more winter hardy citrus stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, Poncerus trifoliata, but also other citrus stuff which came out of hybridizing Poncerus trifoliata with normal citrus varieties. And so we are nowadays really producing citrus here in Switzerland.
Okay.
Not all of our citrus, but the more hardy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we hope to find more interesting varieties for northern gardens also in citrus.
Okay, but they are good sweet varieties as well, or are they as good as would be in Spain?
I think there are good edible varieties, but sweet, yes. How sweet is a lemon?
Yeah.
So
I was thinking orange.
Good and very interesting lemon.
He's good at marketing, isn't he?
I was thinking lime.
Which are winter hardy till minus 12, minus 13 degrees.
Okay. But we can't grow mangoes in England, can we?
No, but if you are interested, no, you can't. But if you are really interested in an exotic and southern fruit, it's very easy to grow pawpaws.
Ah.
And the arome is very similar.
But the original pawpaw, the one that you would see in Bali?
No, pawpaw, Acemina triloba from Northern America. That's a tropical fruit, which when the climate changed in the U.S. state in North America, didn't go back to the south and adapted to the climate. So it's really a very exotic fruit, which is winter hardy, absolutely winter hardy. And we are producing early ripening varieties, which are which mm-hmm. are ripening in northern Germany and also in UK without any problems.
Okay.
It's a very exotic cool. taste, a yeah. little bit mango-like.
Oh, well, there you go. That's answered my mango question.
And the pawpaw tree is actually a tree with massive big leaves, isn't it?
Yeah.
I remember seeing yes. that.
Yeah, really
shot.
Pretty
really
as well
pretty,
as...
pretty, lovely
as
tree.
As well as productive.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, thank you so much, Marcus. And we've come to the end of our first part. And in the second part, we'll be back to talk about what listeners can grow at home. I thought, Marcus... is a really interesting character, actually. Mm. A lovely guy, but his passion for fruit was so clear really early on.
Mm.
And he must be really patient. You know, to breed a new variety takes that long. I can't imagine waiting for something for 20 years.
The world's most impatient person. Fruit breeding is not for you, darling.
It isn't for me. It really isn't. Oh. But what an interesting... set up and
I know.
Something to learn about, because I would never, as a home grower of fruit, I've never really thought about the breeding process or
no,
the commercial
and how
aspect
the fruit
of
gets,
it.
Gets into your garden
no.
because it is very different to breed a fruit that is released commercially
yeah.
on the supermarket
and that was
shelves.
I'd never thought about that.
Than one for home use, isn't it? And
completely.
That's why when we grow at home, we can experience so many better flavours,
yeah.
nutrient content, and more excitement as well. Well, in part two, we're going to find out a little bit more from Marcus. He's going to tell us a few more of those exotic fruit varieties that you can grow in your garden at home. We've already learned about the papaya, which is almost like a kind of mango you can grow in Northern
yeah.
Europe.
Yeah.
And we're also going to find about a few more, plus some everyday varieties that he recommends for gardens and patios. Brilliant. So we're back with Marcus and we're going to talk more about all of the exotic fruit and vegetables that he's been developing. But more importantly, we're going to let you know which ones are available in the UK in particular and ones that you guys can grow at home in these cooler northern climates. So first of all, we want to talk about kind of why people would grow fruit and veg at home and how the taste is so much better and the nutrient value is better as well. And what are the real benefits to growing your own fruit and veg at home, Marcus?
Yeah, I think the real benefit, I think, is real and psychological. So real
okay.
it is because you are picking fruit when it's ripened. And which makes a big difference because systematically when you are producing fruit for long transports, for being hard and firm for weeks before consummation, then you have to pick much earlier,
mm-hmm.
Much too early. And the second is a psychological factor, perhaps which is perhaps not objective, but you know, feelings are also very important. So it's your plant, it's your fruit, and it will always taste better.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
We
yeah,
cannot really decide if this is objective or subjective, but in the end, it's a fact.
Mm-hmm. It's both. And does it matter if it's either or? If that's how you
no.
feel when you
no.
taste it, if you enjoy it and you eat it and you think it tastes better, it doesn't matter, does it? Nothing
mm.
else matters.
No. No, but we have something, for example, we have some older varieties of ours, especially our first two columnar varieties, Fresco and Dolcezza, so very nice varieties, variety names. But to be honest, our newer varieties are better.
Mm.
And so Fresco is really very fresco, very fresh, very sour. And Dolcezza is very sweet, but a little bit... Poor. It's only sweet, nothing else. But we know our clients, and many of our clients, they love these two varieties because it's theirs, and they have developed together with the plants, and they think that these are the best apples. I, as a breeder, know there are better ones.
Yeah.
But it's their apple. And so this effect for every consumer is always there, and it's very important.
Oh, that's really interesting,
okay.
isn't it, actually? And nowadays, there's many more people who do grow their own. There certainly seems to be kind of a new wave of that happening. And many people are growing in urban gardens, patios, balconies, you know, in smaller spaces like myself. I've only got a small garden as well. So are there some really space-effective fruits that people could grow perhaps in containers in a back garden, in the UK specifically, but anywhere in the world as well?
Of course, in the end, you can grow almost everything in a container if you want to do it. And okay. And there are some plants who love it more, other less, but in the end, it's always possible. I think the easiest plant in fruits to have in a very small space in the garden is still a strawberry. Mm-hmm. And there are every-bearing strawberries, especially every-bearing perhaps with additional ornamental value, with pink flowers or with bigger flowers or half-filled flowers, I think, or with flowers above the leaves, are very interesting. I think the future, for example, of strawberries for the home garden, for the home garden market, will be always a plant which is also ornamental. Yeah, you know, in the past, it always worked the way that there was strawberry breeding for the professional market, and after some years, this variety, if they were adapted, came also to the home garden market. And I think in the future, we'll be more the other way around. So first, we have to breed ornamental and very good eating variety for the home garden market, and perhaps some of this very creative new ways of breeding strawberries will also go one day to the professional market. Yeah. So it's another way around.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because, you know, as I know this sounds really awful to raspberries, which I love, but they're not the prettiest of plants, you know. So in my small garden, that isn't a fruit that I would choose to grow because I also want it to look really lovely, but I grow that on the allotment. But at home, yes, I grow strawberries because they do look really pretty. The flowers are lovely. You can grow them in baskets and pots, can't you?
Yeah, but what about, there are some shorter raspberries which are now available, but then they wouldn't produce as much in a space, would they? So, yeah, I guess it's swings and roundabouts, isn't it?
Yeah.
But Marcus, which fruits can people grow at home that you really could never buy in the shops? Because I know it makes a difference to fruits such as strawberries and definitely tomatoes, but what fruits would you never see on the supermarket shelf? And so your only option is to grow your own at home.
If you have a normal-sized garden, I think. So I still think that Pointillus, so Eleagnus umbellata, and also Eleagnus multiflora are very interesting fruits. It's an easy plant. It's growing everywhere. It's a pioneer plant. It's growing in a hedge, and you can eat the fruit directly from the shrub. It's also very healthy.
How's the taste?
And Pointillus, later, this is the umbellata type, is ripening in September till November, so the latest fruit in your garden.
Okay.
And multiflora is ripening in June. You have really a very long, you have fruits in June, and you can have fruits in September, October, November, and they are directly eatable from the shrub. So something you won't find somewhere. And you can have in your garden. It's also very ornamental.
Is it the one they call the autumn olive? Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And they're sweet. How do they taste?
Very sweet and very sour. The most important thing in autumn olives, so this is an Asian species, came into the US, was used there as a pioneer plant for when you had in the Middle West, for example. They gave millions of these plants to the farmers to make hedges. Yes, from there we tested all varieties, select the best, and we have really some thousand plants in our North German variety seedlings. We are now selecting even new varieties because I think it's a very interesting plant and something nobody knows in Western Europe, and it's really, really interesting. Olives, autumn olives, it's named in the US because of the leaves. They are a little bit olive similar. Otherwise, I think the name is misleading. The fruits has nothing to do with an olive.
Good to know.
Yeah, thanks. Now we know that.
It's more like a red currant, size.
Okay.
There are red ones and yellow ones.
Uh-huh.
So the umbellata are red currant sized, and they are, the type of fruiting is more like a sea buckthorn. They are also relatives.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But not so many thorns and much easier to pick and directly to eat.
Okay.
And you have really to wait till the sugar is coming into the fruit. So you are waiting for weeks in September, October. And from 1 week to another, the fruits becomes good.
Mm-hmm.
It's first it's only astringent and only acid, and then the sugar comes in, and then it's good.
Okay. Oh, wow, you're really out there discovering these different fruit varieties that we haven't seen before, and ones that we can't buy in the shops.
That's so fascinating, actually. Yes. I'd really love for our listeners, especially anyone who's thinking about starting to grow their own fruit, perhaps, you know, starting their own fruit garden or growing fruit on an allotment. What do you have, like, a top three fruits that you would recommend for the beginner fruit gardener?
Perhaps if you are a gardener, and there are also gardeners like this, who are interested more in grilling than in gardening, then I would really plant something like this potentilla or pointilla.
Okay.
Not potentilla, these pointilla plants, these Eleagnus plants, because it's easy. You don't have to do anything.
Okay.
If you are really interested a little bit in gardening, I would think the three main plants would be very easy. An apple tree, a raspberry plant, an autumn-bearing raspberry plant, and, of course, strawberries.
Yeah.
So very, very conservative then.
Yeah, okay. That's all good.
That's nice.
Can't go wrong with raspberries, can you really?
But what's great is even in a small garden these days, you can grow things in baskets, window boxes and containers, as you've pointed out to us. So we've learned so much about a range of different fruits and also new breeds coming through. Just want to kind of finish things off talking about where your fruits are available in the UK, because you've had a long relationship with Sutton's, I believe, and a lot of your varieties have gone through the Sutton's catalogue, and indeed they're actually the sponsor of our podcast here. So have you got anything new coming up with them over the next couple of seasons?
For the moment, I don't really know. So they are selling some of our fruit varieties.
Uh-huh.
Of course, we have our own web shop in the UK, Lubera Co. UK. We have to have a closer look to the future in the next days and weeks and months. Mm-hmm. You too.
Okay, yeah.
Because of Fruxit or Brexit or whatever
you call it, Fruxit.
if we will be able to send fruit plants directly from our German nursery again to UK or not.
But maybe by the time this podcast goes out, there might be some answers, because this won't be going out until the end of April. So who knows? Who knows? But
I'm not sure. I think, you know, I'm Swiss. Mm-hmm. And we are not in the EU. And it's something which is politically, not economically, politically, in my opinion, for us in Switzerland, the right decision. Mm-hmm. But we have to pay for it. And it's a never-ending story. It doesn't end. Mm-hmm. Because everything, you have always to regulate again with the EU. So discussion about EU and our relationship with the EU are every year, every month. Mm-hmm. I was 10 years in politics as an amateur, and as a president of a party in our region, and it never ends, this discussion, and it will also not end for your country.
I feel like that's a whole other podcast.
I know. We've had a little taster there of pears and politics.
Both of which aren't that great.
I'll show you a juicy pear.
Anyway, please. Thank you so much, Marcus. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. And I feel really inspired now to go and have a look for some new and exciting fruit varieties, especially ones grown in containers. It's been an absolute pleasure. So thank you so much. I'm now going to leave the room because I don't want Michael to show me a fruity pear.
It's great.
Thank you very much, and go on gardening.
Brilliant. Yeah, thank you very much, Marcus.
Thank you.
We'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I feel really nervous when you giggle like that.
I each time I plan a cool stunt for, you know, starting off the conversation. And this time I'm going to make reference to my tahini cookie.
Is it nice?
I don't know, I'm only just about to eat it. Tahini is obviously sesame seed paste. Sesame seed is a plant. It brings us back to plant-based products.
Okay, perfect. Well done.
But we're not talking about exotic seeds, such as sesame, in this gossip section. We're talking about exotic fruits that we've either grown or eaten. What's the most exotic thing you put in your mouth, Ellen?
What if I can't think of anything? Excuse me, don't
you let that one pass,
biscuit all over the floor.
Very crumbly.
The most exotic
fruit. It's probably, to be honest, a lychee, because aren't they lovely? Oh, flavour is amazing.
They're like eyeballs, fleshy eyeballs.
I've never eaten an eyeball, so I don't know. But yeah, I assume perhaps they are like an eyeball.
But they're so sweet. So sweet as well, aren't they? You've just eaten them fresh?
Yeah, just fresh. Mm.
I love when you bite them off the seed
yeah.
in the middle, and it's so shiny, isn't it?
Yes, it's beautiful. It's actually, it's a really lovely plant. Mm. So I really love lychees. What's the
plant look like? Have you seen it in
beautiful in Asia? And green in Singapore.
Oh, cool.
Lovely foliage.
Mm. What about rambutans?
I've never had rambutans.
They're like a lychee, but hairier.
Okay,
if you can imagine that.
Like a hairy eyeball?
Yeah. I like mango. In Australia, when I was travelling, you've been in Australia a lot, when I was travelling in Australia years ago, the mangoes were the ripest I'd ever seen in the world. Honestly, fleshy, golden, soft. Oh my God, they were delicious.
Yeah.
The mangoes we get in the UK are just these kind of weird, green, semi-blushed. Ugh,
they're horrible. Quite hard, actually. It's the climate, though, isn't disgusting. It, of course, over there. But it's, that helps them to be that lovely kind of fleshy and sweet flavour as well.
Have you ever eaten a golden raspberry?
No, but this is really... Sorry, I got really excited then. You did actually ask me earlier on what fruits I was growing on the allotment. We were chatting about that, weren't we? And Sandra from Veg and Beds, who I met on Instagram, she comes to No Fear Gardening, gave me some golden raspberries for my allotment.
Oh, wow.
And I forgot all about that. Well, they're in.
I've never tasted one, but I've heard that they taste of a mixture between banana and apricot.
Okay, well, I've not tasted one. This is my first year growing them. But Sandra did say that they are best eaten straight off the plant. Don't bother trying.
You never see them in the shops, do you?
No. Maybe that's why. Maybe they don't last so long and the taste isn't very good. But she said if you eat them straight, you know, as soon as you've harvested them, perfect.
Okay, that's cool. You also mentioned, when we were chatting earlier, red gooseberries, which you can eat fresh.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool, because the gooseberries in my childhood were kind of green and sour.
I kind of like that sour taste.
Really? I guess that is traditional gooseberry taste, isn't it?
I like that. I like it when you kind of, you know, when you put it in your mouth and you kind of go, it makes your eyes water almost. I kind of like that feeling.
Well, like when you're picking, like, wild blackberries.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got so many memories of going to... pick your own farms when I was a kid.
Pick your own
picking
farms.
Picking blackberries, raspberries, tayberries, loganberries. You said you got some loganberries.
Growing.
Wow. And I was kind of fascinated with all the different hybrid berries as well. It's really cool.
There's still quite a few pick your own places around. Really? There certainly are in Norfolk.
But you know how it goes. You walk around, you eat probably as much as you pick. You get a tummy ache, you go home. You probably never use the fruit because you got that tummy ache for a week.
Put you off. Pick your own are great.
Oh my gosh.
It's great. Strawberries are really good for picking your own. I love where you go into the massive big polytunnels and they have rows and rows of strawberries. Yeah. I love
and also
that.
At picking height, which is not only more convenient, but it's away from pest and disease. Mm. I feel more people should grow their strawberries elevated in a veg truck or a basket because it's away from pest and disease.
Yeah.
And also, it's not dragging on the ground, getting all muddy.
Yeah, muddy foliage on strawberry leaves is never a good thing.
Muddy. But what fruit? Do you think you eat enough fruit?
Well,
be honest.
I eat a plant-based diet, so I do eat quite a lot of fruit, but I eat more vegetables than I do fruit.
Mm.
I think there's a limit to how much fruit I can have a day. Maybe it's just a bit too much. Too sugary? I don't know.
Fruit's weird, isn't it? I've never loved it.
I think you have, like, a preference. What's your favourite fruit, then?
Raspberry.
Raspberry's your favourite?
Raspberry, my favourite vegetable.
Favourite vegetable?
Broad bean. I've rehearsed those over many years.
Why don't you eat fruit, so much fruit, then, in a day? What, do you have any fruit in a day?
Not usually, no.
Do you have vegetables, though?
I love vegetables, to be honest. I love greens, asparagus.
Yeah.
All of that jazz.
Okay. So you just need to incorporate a little bit of fruit.
Do you like bananas?
I'm not a fan of bananas.
I hate bananas.
I don't like them when they've even remotely gone brown, but actually they're really good for you when they're very, very, you know, just when they're very slightly gone.
I'd probably have them in a smoothie, that's as much. But
yeah, I'd rather have them in a smoothie, but I do eat bananas. I have an apple most days.
Do you?
Apparently it keeps the doctor
But I
away.
Couldn't eat an apple. I'd have to slice it up. Yeah.
Sliced apple with peanut butter is really nice.
True, that's very hipster.
It's very yummy.
Or with almond butter.
Yeah, I don't know. But those, what puts me off fruit is the vacuum-packed ones that you see, obviously, in the supermarkets, which are the most convenient to eat, but they just always seem so sad and cold. I hate really cold food as well.
Okay. Mm. Wow, we're really learning about your eating habits here.
I'm really getting my feelings out here.
You are, aren't you?
It's like I'm in fruit therapy.
I'm not sure that I would be a good therapist, though. You just need to eat more fruit. Like, although grapes.
You need to assimilate me with the fruit. Grapes, no, waste of time. Waste of time.
I don't know what to say to that.
I don't know.
Kiwi?
No.
I like kiwi.
Kiwi, no.
Kiwi, no.
You know what I mean? That? Kiwi berries.
Oh, no.
You know, the tiny ones.
Oh.
Same size as gooseberry. They are delicious because they're not... you don't have to skin them, if you know what I mean. They're hairless. And they're like a sweeter version of kiwi.
Oh. They're delicious. Okay, very nice. Mm,
really nice. Easy to grow as well.
Have you tried cucamelons?
They're a bit pointless.
I grew them once in my greenhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And they took up quite a lot of room to get quite a lot of them. And I would generally just pick them and eat them as I was working in the greenhouse rather than harvesting them to use
there's
for anything.
There's not much flavour, though, is there? I mean, they look cute, but that's it.
I thought they were kind of a little bit zesty. Mm. They were fun, you know? I don't think
they good for you, though? Again. I'm not sure.
I don't know the answer to that. Mm. But there might be some in that pile of seeds I've got sitting opposite you.
Have a rummage in the seeds.
These ones. Oh. I think there might be some cucamelons in there. I don't know.
There's a lettuce.
Some of the
went to space.
Michael's looking at, thinking that wouldn't grow that.
Sorry, no, they've all fallen everywhere.
Oh, don't
now.
Worry about that.
Cucumelon. Cool. Oh, that's really lovely. Not sure what else to say.
No. Are we done with fruit?
I think we might be. You're a fruit.
The Plant-Based Podcast is sponsored by Sutton's, suppliers of gardeners' favourite products since 1806. Unsurprisingly, Sutton's now have everything you need for your outside space. Award-winning flower and vegetable plants, garden furniture and equipment, plus gifts for gardeners. Visit them online at suttons.co.uk.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Plant-Based Podcast.
Have a browse of the rest of the library or hop on over to the website, which is theplantbasedpodcast.net.
You'll also find our social media links. Please connect with us and let us know about any plant-based projects that you think we should be covering on the show.
And make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you'll be the first to hear the next episode. We're releasing once a fortnight. So until next time, enjoy the world of plants.